This is the Music Halls of Fame podcast. This week, we honor the year in music for 1999, along with a member of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame class of 1999. We also look at two of this year's nominees for the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Plus, our Spotlight Hall of Fame is the Canadian Music Hall of Fame in Calgary, Alberta, Canada. Before we get going with the podcast, like everyone tells you, please like, subscribe, and hit the notification bell so you'll know when these podcast episodes drop, which is usually every Thursday. Now, on to this week's episode. The year was 1999. In music, the Recording Industry Association of America went to court against Napster, which was officially founded in 1999. The RIAA also went to court against consumers who illegally downloaded music. The first person convicted was a student of the University of Oregon who received 2 years of probation along with only being allowed limited internet time, which, when you consider that it was 1999 internet, meant that he really didn't miss anything. I mean, it's not like you could play video games with your friends or stream anything at that time. Plus, social media was, well, AOL chat rooms, I guess? Anywho, David Bowie's Hours became the first full album to be legally available for downloading. He released it digitally 2 weeks before he released it either on vinyl or on CD. A&M Records merged with Universal Music Group, becoming yet another historic record label to be completely taken over by one of the big three. The Columbine High School shooting happened in 1999, and as is the case anytime something like that happened, music and video games were blamed. Specifically, the bands this time around, Marilyn Manson, Rammstein, and KMFDM. 1999 was also the year of the boy bands, with NSYNC, the Backstreet Boys, the Disney Channel sound with Britney Spears, and the rap metal sound with Limp Bizkit. The Woodstock 99 festival took place, which was marred by alleged sexual assaults and riots. Also in festival news, it was the first year of Instagram in the Desert, otherwise known these days as Coachella. Korn became the first rock group to perform a concert at the famed Apollo Theater in Harlem, New York. A man attacked George Harrison in his own home with a knife. Puff Daddy and rapper Shine were arrested on weapons charges in connection with a shooting at a New York City nightclub. Puff Daddy would be found not guilty. As the year wore down, artists got ready for the New Year Millennium celebrations, as everyone's favorite conspiracy theory about Y2K haunted the events of New Year's Eve. For those of you who forgot that year's version of QAnon, the Y2K bug was going to make everyone's electrical devices shut off at midnight, as computers and such couldn't read the year 2000 in their system. The electric grid was supposed to shut down, mass hysteria, eventually zombies, I'm sure, and The Walking Dead. Of course, none of that actually happened. Well, okay, except for the zombie part, that those were mainly the people coming back from partying hard that night. Groups that formed in 1999 included 3LW, the All-American Rejects, Breaking Benjamin, Avenged Sevenfold, Cosmic Gate, Dashboard Confessional, Alice DJ, Discord, G-Unit, Goldfrapp, Fiction Plane, Junior Boys, Montgomery Gentry, Nerd, The National, Ozone, Madison Avenue, A Perfect Circle, Rascal Flatts, Taking Back Sunday, Tattoo, Simple Plan, and Zombie Nation. Bands that either broke up until their inevitable reunions, of course, or announced their hiatus include KMFDM, The Lost Boys, Love and Rockets, Katrina and the Waves, Lord Tariq and Peter Guns, Maroon 5, Bad Company, Blind Melon, The Boo Radleys, The Band, Mad Season, Morphine, The New Radicals, Pavement, Emerson, Lake and Palmer, Grantley Buffalo, Squeeze, The Jesus and Mary Chain, The Jesus Lizard, and The Verve. The Animals officially reformed in 1999. The biggest albums of the year were by the Backstreet Boys, Britney Spears, Creed, Dido, the Dixie Chicks, now of course known as the Chicks, Destiny's Child, Celine Dion, Blink 182, Red Hot Chili Peppers, Shania Twain, NSYNC, Ricky Martin, Christina Aguilera, Santana, TLC, Kid Rock, and Eminem. Singles-wise, at the age of 52, Cher became the oldest female artist to reach number one on the Billboard 100 singles chart with her song Believe. Hit Me Baby One More Time, the debut single from Britney Spears, was one of the biggest singles of the year. Other big hits included Lou Bega's Mambo No. 5, Eiffel 65's Blue, TLC's No Scrubs, the Backstreet Boys with I Want It That Way, Cher's aforementioned big hit Believe, Monica's Angel of Mine, Whitney Houston's Heartbreak Hotel, Sixpence None the Richer's Kiss Me, Sugar Ray's Every Morning, Deborah Cox's Nobody's Supposed to Be Here, and Ricky Martin's classic Livin' La Vida Loca. The most overplayed song that year by far was actually a song that came out in the early 1980s, Prince's 1999, for obvious reasons. Faith Hill had one of the biggest selling country albums, along with the Dixie Chicks, Shania Twain, Tim McGraw, Garth Brooks, and Leanne Rimes. Those six artists were the only ones, in fact, to hit number one on the Billboard Country Albums chart during the year, with most of those artists holding down the number one slot for more than 4 weeks at a time. In fact, Shania Twain's album, Come On Over, spent 26 weeks, that is literally half a year, at number one on that particular chart. Faith Hill had the biggest country single of the year with Breathe. Other country hits were Lone Star's Amazed, Kenny G's Auld Lang Syne, for obvious reasons, Kenny Chesney's How Forever Feels, Martina McBride's I Love You, Tim McGraw's Please Remember Me, and also his hit Something Like That, Joe D. Messina's Stand By Me, George Strait's Write This Down, and Mark Chestnut's I Don't Want to Miss a Thing. In hip-hop, there were transcending albums like Mos Def's Black on Both Sides, The Roots' Things Fall Apart, MF Doom's Operation Doomsday, Eminem's The Slim Shady LP, DMX's And Then There Was X, Jay-Z's Volume 3, Life and Times of S. Carter, Silk the Shocker's Made Man, Method Man and Redman's Blackout, Nas's I Am, and Juvenile's The G-Code. As far as singles went, Busta Rhymes and Janet Jackson had What's It Gonna Be, Naughty by Nature had Jamboree, Mo Thug's Family had Ghetto Cowboy, Jay-Z had The Hard Knock Life, and also the song Can I Getta from the Rush Hour soundtrack, Juvenile had Back That Thang Up, Lauryn Hill had Everything Is Everything, Old Dirty Bastard and Khalees had Got Your Money, Warren G had I Want It All, and Q-Tip had Vibrant Thing. In dance music, there were future EDM festival anthems that became huge hits in 1999, like 9 p.m. Till I Come from ATB, Expander by Sasha, Carte Blanche by Viracocha, Eiffel 45's Blue, Boom 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 by the Benga Boys, Fatboy Slim's Right Here Right Now, DJ Tiesto's remix of William Orbit and Ferry Corsten's rendition of Barber's Adagio for Strings, and also Better Off Alone by Alice DJ, which still gets played in festivals all over the place these days. In fact, it was one of the top five most played tracks during 2023's festivals like Tomorrowland, while Blue actually got the David Guetta remix treatment and was turned into the chart-topping song Feeling All Right. Speaking of music festivals, 1999 was the year of the first Ultra Miami Music Festival, which was started by Russell Fabish and Alex Ohms. The movie that chronicled the British club scene, Human Traffic, opened. Other popular EDM tracks were DJ Tiesto's remix of Delirium and Sarah McLachlan's Silence, Amber's Sexual, Basement Jax's Red Alert, Groove Armada's I See You Baby, Shaking That Thang, Madison Avenue's Don't Call Me Baby, The Chemical Brothers' Hey Boy, Hey Girl, and Zombie Nation's Kerncraft 400, which is a song that you know even if you don't think that you know it, because it's played at virtually every soccer match. In fact, it's one of the biggest sports anthems of all time. Moby's album Play was also very popular that year. The top 10 DJs on DJ Mag's Top 100 DJs list included Paul Oakenfold, Carl Cox, Sasha, Judge Jules, Paul Van Dyke, John Digweed, Fatboy Slim, Danny Tenaglia, Roger Sanchez, and Nick Warren. The top artists in Latin music were Ricky Martin, Elvis Crespo, Selena, Enrique Iglesias, Shakira, Buena Vista Social Club, Maná, Conjunto Primavera, Alejandro Fernandez, and Jennifer Lopez and Marc Anthony. In theater, musicals or revivals that opened on Broadway included Amadeus, Fosse, Annie Get Your Gun, Kiss Me Kate, Peter Pan, Saturday Night Fever, and Swing. Musical films that came out in 1999 were Double Platinum and The Adventures of Elmo in Grouchland, along with animated movies Tarzan, South Park, Bigger, Longer, and Uncut, and Madeline, Lost in Paris. Artists who were born in 1999 included Lil Nas X, Madison Beer, Sabrina Carpenter, NBA Youngboy, Harvey, Pop Smoke, Polo G, Trippy Red, YNW Melly, Jack Avery of Why Don't We, and Daniel Seavey. Artists who unfortunately passed away in 1999 included conductor Robert Shaw, singer Buddy Knox, rapper Big L, singer Dusty Springfield, jazz singer Helen Forrest, musician Jackson C. Frank, composer Ernest Gold, singer Joe Williams, singer and actor Anthony Newley, singer Roger Troutman, bandleader Al Hurt, conductor Paul Sacher, singer Mel Torme, reggae singer Dennis Brown, singer Guy Mitchell, musician Mark Sandman, drummer Gar Samuelson, musician Moondog, singer Frankie Vaughn, jazz trumpet player Art Farmer, musician Milt Jackson, singer and actor Hoyt Axton, composer Frank Duvall, Adrian Borland of The Sound, drum and bass icon Chemistry, musician Doug Sam, saxophonist Grover Washington Jr., jazz musician Charlie Bird, musician Scatman John, musician Rick Danko, singer and actor Rex Allen, musician Hank Snow, and singer Curtis Mayfield. In awards for the music of 1999, Carlos Santana was the big winner at the Grammy Awards, tying Michael Jackson for the most Grammy Award wins in 1 year with 8 awards, including Album of the Year for Supernatural and Record and Song of the Year for Smooth with Rob Thomas of Matchbox 20. Christina Aguilera won Best New Artist that year. Britney Spears' Hit Me Baby One More Time won Video of the Year at the MTV Video Music Awards. Will Smith, Shania Twain, and the Backstreet Boys won at the American Music Awards. The Backstreet Boys also won Artist of the Year at the Billboard Music Awards, while R. Kelly won Album of the Year for the album R at the Soul Train Music Awards, and Shania Twain, Ricky Martin, and the Backstreet Boys won at the People's Choice Awards. At the Eurovision Singing Contest, which was held in Jerusalem that year, Charlotte Nilsson from Sweden won for the song Take Me to Your Heaven. Shania Twain won Entertainer of the Year at the Country Music Association Awards, and she also won Entertainer of the Year at the Academy of Country Music Awards. The band Travis won Best British Album for The Man Who, and Robbie Williams won Best Song for She's the One at the Brit Awards. Alanis Morissette won Best Album for supposed former Infatuation Junkie, while The Tragically Hip won Best Song for Bob Kajian at the Juno Awards. Powderfinger won Best Album of the Year for The Internationalist, and they also won Best Song of the Year for The Day You Come at the ARIA Music Awards. At the Tony Awards, Fosse won Best Musical, and Annie Get Your Gun won Best Revival of a Musical. The Pulitzer Prize for Music was won by John Adams for On the Transmigration of Souls. at the Academy Awards. Musically, Phil Collins won Best Song for You'll Be in My Heart from the movie Tarzan, while John Corigliano won Best Original Score for The Red Violin. Talvin Singh won the Mercury Music Prize for the album OK. The Rock and Roll Hall of Fame induction ceremony was held on March 15, 1999 at the Waldorf Astoria Hotel in New York City. At the ceremony, Paul McCartney made one of his first public appearances since the death of his wife and Wings bandmate Linda McCartney in 1998 from cancer. Paul was there to present legendary producer Sir George Martin for induction into the non-performers category. Charles Brown, along with Bob Wills and his Texas Playboys, were inducted into the early influencers category. And in the performers category, the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame inducted a popular lineup, which consisted of Bruce Springsteen, the Staple Singers, Del Shannon, Sir Paul McCartney himself, Billy Joel, Dusty Springfield, and this next artist. Curtis Mayfield was born on June 3, 1942. When he was growing up, he sang in gospel choir groups, and in 1956, he joined a group called the Roosters with his friend Jerry Butler, along with Arthur and Richard Brooks. Sam Gooden joined the group soon thereafter. The Roosters changed their name to The Impressions in 1958 and had two hits before Jerry Butler left the group, Come Back My Love and For Your Precious Love. Curtis went with Butler for a little while, co-writing a couple of Butler's solo hits before Curtis went back to the Impressions, along with original Roosters member Fred Cash, who had replaced Butler. The group, now Curtis, Fred Cash, and Sam Gooden, signed to ABC Records and started putting out hit after hit. The Impressions' music was important to the civil rights and black pride movements of the 1960s. Their songs, written and produced by Mayfield, combined gospel and soul and dealt with themes of empowerment, social issues, and faith, with songs like Your Precious Love, People Get Ready, This Is My Country, and Check Out Your Mind. In 1968, Curtis started Curtum Records in Chicago, Illinois, and put The Impressions onto his new record label. Also on Curtis's record label were the Five Stair Steps, the Staple Singers, along with Mavis Staples, Gene Chandler, and Leroy Hudson. In 1970, after finishing the album Check Out Your Mind, Curtis left The Impressions and started a solo career. He still continued to put out albums and songs about social issues, along with writing three big hits for Butler, I'm a Tellin' You, Find Another Girl, and He Will Break Your Heart, as well as a couple of hits for fellow artist Major Lance. In the early 1970s in film, there was the genre called blaxploitation movies. These movies showed mainly inner-city life. However, a lot of the times, the heroes of the movies were either pimps or drug dealers. One of these movies was called Superfly, starring Ron O'Neill as a drug dealer trying to quit his life. Curtis was asked to do the soundtrack to the movie. He said yes, but he chose a different viewpoint with the music. Whereas most soundtracks of the genre glorified the subject matters of the blaxploitation movies, the Superfly soundtrack told of the evils of the drug trade. Pusher Man, for instance, told of how easy it was for people to get hooked on the criminal life, especially dealing drugs. Freddy's Dead, one of the two songs to be released as singles along with the song Superfly, told of one of the characters in the movie who had to work for the drug dealer, but he couldn't pay off the money he owed the dealer. You could tell by the title of the song how well that ended up. The soundtrack, unlike the movie, pulled no punches when it came to being critical of the gang and drug dealing life. It, along with Marvin Gaye's What's Going On, ushered in a new wave of socially conscious soul music in the 1970s. Plus, the album did really well on the albums chart, going to number one and selling over 12 million copies worldwide. Curtis would continue to put out albums and tour until an accident on stage in Brooklyn, New York on August 13, 1990, when a light fell and hit him, leaving him paralyzed from the neck down. Even after he became paralyzed, though, Curtis still continued to write music. He even recorded vocals for a song by lying down on a recording studio. Diabetes started to take its toll on his body when he had to have his right leg amputated in 1998. Curtis Mayfield passed away on December 26, 1999, from complications from diabetes, just 1 week shy of the new millennium. Curtis's influence on music is immeasurable. His songs about socially conscious issues influenced Jimi Hendrix, Tracy Chapman, Stevie Wonder, Sinead O'Connor, Bob Marley, Sly Stone, as well as Marvin Gaye's iconic What's Going On album. His music and guitar playing have made many a best of list, including 7 of Rolling Stone magazine's best of lists. Curtis released 17 albums. Of those, 9 hit the top 40 on the U.S. pop charts, although only 1972 Superfly went to the top 10, but it went to number 1. On the R&B chart, he had 16 top 40 albums, with 9 of those 16 going top 10 and 6 of those 9 going to number 1. He also released 34 singles, with 3 of those going top 40 and 2 of those 3 going top 10, both of those from the Superfly soundtrack. On the R&B front, 19 went top 40, with 6 of those 19 going top 10. Curtis has 3 songs that made the Grammy Music Hall of Fame: People Get Ready with The Impressions and 2 solo songs, Superfly and Move On Up. He was nominated for 8 Grammy Awards, winning none of them. However, he did receive 2 special Grammys, a Legend Award and a Lifetime Achievement Award. He's been inducted into the Songwriters Hall of Fame and is one of the few artists who have been inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame twice. His group, The Impressions, that we spoke about earlier, were inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in 1991. And Curtis was inducted in as a solo artist in 1999, although he couldn't attend the ceremony due to his ill health at that time. Presented for induction by Sean Combs, the man dubbed the Gentle Genius, Mr. Curtis Mayfield, inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in 1999, and we have put his music onto this week's podcast playlist, the link to which is in the show notes. Before we go any further, we'd like to tell you that there is now a Music History in Depth podcast where we go more in depth on a few of the events that happened in music history for that particular week. The Music History in Depth podcast drops every Tuesday on YouTube or wherever you get your podcasts from, as does our Music History Today podcast, which goes over the daily events in music history. The Music History Today podcast drops daily, including weekends, on YouTube or wherever you get your podcasts. Now, back to this podcast. The Rock and Roll Hall of Fame released its nominees for the Performers category for this year's induction into the next class for the Hall. This list does not, I repeat, does not include whoever they decide will be inducted into the other categories like Musical Excellence or Early Influencer. Therefore, the list is as follows: Mary J. Blige, Mariah Carey, Cher, The Dave Matthews Band, Eric B. and Rakim, Foreigner, Peter Frampton, Jane's Addiction, Kool & the Gang, Lenny Kravitz, Oasis, Sinead O'Connor, Ozzy Osbourne, Sade, and A Tribe Called Quest. That's not a bad list at all, actually. The good news on this is that you get to vote for whoever gets inducted, as the fan vote is a small part of the total vote. So go to rockhall.com, that's rockhall.com, to vote. You can vote for 7 artists once a day, every day, through April 26th. For the next couple of months, we're going to make the case for you to vote for an artist or two to be inducted. We will look at least 2 artists per episode until we get through the list. This week, it is hip-hop's turn on the hot seat. Again, hip-hop does belong in the Rock Hall, so all you people who are still trying to make the argument that it doesn't, you already lost it, give up, just go with it. Now that that's out of the way, to the tail of the tape we go. Let us first look at the case for putting Eric B. and Rakim into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Eric B. and Rakim are a hip-hop duo whose reputation was built on the strength of four albums between 1987 to 1992. 1987's album, Paid in Full, hit number 58 on the U.S. pop charts and number 8 on the R&B charts. It was also their biggest-selling album, going platinum. 1988's Follow the Leader went to number 2 on the pop charts and number 7 on the R&B chart and went gold. 1990's Let the Rhythm Hit 'Em went to number 32 on the pop charts and number 10 on the R&B charts and also went gold. And 1992's Don't Sweat the Technique went to number 22 on the pop charts and number 9 on the R&B charts, but it did not go gold. As far as singles went, they released 16 of them. Out of those, only 1992's Juice, Know the Ledge hit the U.S. pop charts, hitting number 96, actually, on that one. 7 of their songs actually hit the U.S. dance charts, with Move the Crowd and Paid in Full going to number 3. They had 12 songs hit the R&B charts, 8 songs hit the rap charts, as Billboard and other chart companies were just a little late getting started on the hip-hop charts, which was still considered a fad way back when, especially in the 80s, into the early 90s, actually. They were also featured on Jody Watley's Top 10 1989 smash hit song, Friends. Now, what makes the duo worthy of being in the hall is their influence on hip-hop, especially their style. They used dark beats rather than the pop sound that dominated hip-hop back then. They also free-flowed their raps instead of landing each one perfectly on the 2-4 beat. They also incorporated jazz into their mixes, starting an experimental period in hip-hop that became known as the Golden Age of hip-hop, and also kind of goes right into our second group that we will talk about in a minute. Eric B. and Rakim were massively influential with just about every single rapper afterwards. Rolling Stone magazine named them the 5th greatest duo of all time, regardless of genre. Let the Rhythm Hit 'Em, Paid in Full, Move the Crowd, which was name-checked on LL Cool J's classic song Boomin' System, and Don't Sweat the Technique are considered hip-hop masterpieces, especially the song Paid in Full. The duo made the list of 15 of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame back in 2011. However, they did not make the final cut that year. And it is about time that Eric B. and Rakim made the final list this go-around. Next, let's look at A Tribe Called Quest. A Tribe Called Quest released 6 studio albums, 5 compilation albums, and 2 EPs. Of those, 4 of them hit the top 10, with 2 of those 4 going to number 1. On the R&B charts, 7 hit the top 40, with 4 of those 7 going top 10, including 3 going to number 1. They also released 16 singles. They barely made a dent on the pop charts. Where they were monsters were on the rap singles charts, where they had 12 go top 40, with 6 of those 12 going top 10, including 1991's Check the Rhyme, which went to number 1. A Tribe Called Quest were at the forefront of the alternative hip-hop movement in the 1990s, along with the group De La Soul, who should also eventually be inducted, along with the aforementioned Eric B. and Rakim, who actually started putting jazz into their hip-hop even before A Tribe Called Quest. Q-Tip, the late Fife Dawg, Ali Shaheed Muhammad, and Jerobe White took jazz, especially bebop and hard bop samples, mixed it with some hip-hop, and went on to influence everyone from Dr. Dre, whose album The Chronic was inspired by Tribe's legendary album The Low End Theory, to PM Dawn, to the Jungle Brothers, to the Fugees, to the leaders of the New School, to Guru's iconic 1993 album Jazzmatazz, to a lot of the neo-soul artists like Erykah Badu and Maxwell. Their album, The Low End Theory, is considered one of the greatest albums of all time by the United States Library of Congress National Recording Registry, along with Rolling Stone magazine. people still listen to classics like I Left My Wallet in El Segundo, Bonita Applebum, Can I Kick It, Check the Rhymes, Scenario, and War Tour. In short, for their influence on 90s hip-hop and R&B alone, A Tribe Called Quest deserves your vote. Normally, every year, one hip-hop group or artist gets inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. On one occasion, two actually got inducted, but one ended up being inducted into the musical excellence category. That would be LL Cool J, even though he was up for a performer's nomination as well. Which one of those two will get in? Who knows, but at least one of them will be. And you get a chance to decide which one that might be. Remember, go to rockhall.com to vote. You can vote for 7 artists once a day, every day, through April 26th. In America, the main music lobbying group for the recording industry and the one who gives out the Grammy Awards is the Recording Academy. Its Canadian equivalent is the Canadian Academy for the Recording Arts and Sciences. Their version of the Grammys are the Juno Awards. In 1978, the Canadian Academy started inducting groups into the Canadian Music Hall of Fame. The physical hall was opened in 2016 as part of the National Music Center on Level 5 of Studio Bell, which is on 850 4th Street Southeast in Calgary, Alberta, Canada. The center is open 10 to 5, Thursday to Sunday. The price of admission is to pay what you can, and as with everything these days, check with their website first for updated hours of operation. StudioBell.ca is the website. We will throw that into the show notes along with the RockHall.com website so that you can vote for who you think should be inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. That'll be in our show notes. Unlike the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, which normally has 6 or more artists inducted, depending on various category committees, the Canadian Hall usually only inducts one group into its hall per year. In fact, it's only inducted more than one artist per year 6 times since 1978. The Bare Naked Ladies started out as the duo of Ed Robertson and Stephen Page. The two went to school together and liked the same music. They were even camp counselors at the same music camp. They actually came up with their band name after becoming bored at a Bob Dylan concert. They winged their first gig together with no rehearsal time and just played guitar and bantered back and forth. That was actually their very first gig. The duo continued honing their craft, which became sort of a musical comedy routine with made-up lyrics to songs. They modeled their act after the Canadian comedy act Corky and the Juice Pigs. After meeting their comedic idols and handing them a demo tape, they were even invited to be Corky's opening act on the next tour. The band released their first non-indie album in 1991 called The Yellow Tapes, and then they went on tour in Canada to support it. The major labels rejected the album, but it sold pretty well at their shows, and then word of mouth about their shows started to get around Canada, and they ended up becoming a major draw. A controversial event that wasn't actually controversial was the thing that jump-started their career on a national level. The band was kicked off of a New Year's Eve gig at Toronto's Town Hall because politicians thought that their band name objectified women. The band booked a gig elsewhere and moved on. The media, though, got wind of it and ran with the story, saying that it was political correctness that went way too far, to which they were right. What all the controversy did, however, was to finally get them a recording contract with Sire Records. Their first album for the label, 1992's Gordon, had their classics Be My Yoko Ono and the song that's been in a bunch of commercials, If I Had $1 Million. Their next couple of albums, Maybe You Should Drive and Born on a Pirate Ship, were moderately successful, but all of their success so far was in Canada. The album that broke through in America was 1998's Stunt. That album had their smash hit 1 Week along with their song It's All Been Done. 2000's album Maroon had the hit Pinch Me. And after that, the band went back to releasing independent records on their own record label. Then, trouble struck. In 2008, Stephen Page was arrested for cocaine possession. In 2009, he was out of the band. It was said that it was by mutual agreement. While the band's record sales have dropped, they still put out the occasional album. They're also a big draw on the nostalgia circuit, as it were. They were one of the first bands to do nostalgia-themed cruises, which are now all the rage. The band was nominated for 2 Grammy Awards, winning neither of them, 2 Billboard Music Awards, winning both of them, and most importantly to this part of the podcast, 18 Juno Awards, winning 8 of them. They've even been called one of the most important bands to Canadian culture this century. When the band were inducted into the Canadian Music Hall of Fame, they were put in as the Bare Naked Ladies and Stephen Page, due to the fact that Stephen had been out of the band for almost a decade but still deserved recognition. After Rush's Geddy Lee inducted the band, Stephen then joined the band on stage for his first performance with the band in that decade. And while there are no immediate plans for him to rejoin the band, there are also no immediate plans to rule it out either. So stay tuned. They're still around, still kicking, on a cruise ship near you. The Bare Naked Ladies and Stephen Page, inducted into the Canadian Music Hall of Fame in 2018. The Music Halls of Fame podcast is part of the Music History Today Network, which can be found under Music History Today on Spotify, Apple Music, Amazon Music, iHeartRadio, or wherever you get your podcasts from, and also on our YouTube page under Music History Today. Thank you very much for listening.